about a week after Trump leveled his racist lies when he met with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, I was able to catch up with Trevor Ngwane. Trevor is a longtime workers' leader and socialist in South Africa, and he's also a writer and professor of sociology at the University of Johannesburg. Trevor talked about a great many different subjects, and I'm producing this interview with him in several different sections because the interview as a whole was almost 2 hours long. In this first section, Trevor discusses the general views in South Africa of the meeting between Trump and Ramaphosa, as well as his own views. He also discusses the current political situation in South Africa regarding the current government of national unity. And then he goes on to discuss Africa Day and the whole concept of African unity. Finally, he discusses the relationship between South Africa and U.S. imperialism, and also the role of China and Russia. And he concludes with some points about bourgeois democracy. In the following portions of this interview, we will present Trevor's thoughts on what happened in the South African Revolution against apartheid, and a lot more also.
In this country, there's usually not a lot of shades of gray. So if you talk to people, the other fall this side. It was very bad, you know, Ramaphosa. You know, why did he take the billionaire? Why did he take the whites? Only the whites spoke. You know, Trump listened only when the white man spoke, this and that. Also, there's this question of the white guy, his minister, who actually is the leader of the opposition, but now they are in a government of national unity, of one of the white men called the political party Economic Freedom Fighters, and the other political party, Umkhonto Wesizwe, associated with Zuma, you know. So that was that. Firstly, of course, there is that kind of inherent nationalism, you know. He's our guy. He's representing South Africa. South Africa's more or less economic dependence or strong reliance on U.S. American business. Ramaphosa had no other way but to try and flatter Trump, and he couldn't really stand his ground or confront Trump. And then also there's the view that he played his cards well by bringing, you know, the golfers, who apparently Trump asked for the golfers. On the other hand, the critics say, no, but you as president, you should speak for all South Africans. You don't have to bring white people to speak for white people. Can you see? So you are actually, so they feel that Ramaphosa fell into the racialization, you know, of politics.
I asked Trevor what his view was. He started off by describing how he sees the situation.
I would say you find a situation these days of fascists without fascism.
He then talked about the coalition government of national unity.
Especially the new government of national unity. The South African government is retreating from its mandate of national liberation, can you see? Because remember, the whole struggle against apartheid was not just about getting rid of racism, but was also for economic justice. To summarize my point of view, John, I would say Africa is not for sale, can you see? So what came out strongly for me was that Africa is for sale. You know that on Sunday, 25 May, which is like a few days after this debacle, it was Africa Day, you know what I mean? Yeah, that's the day celebrated in everywhere in Africa. That's the day the Organization of African Unity was formed by Kwame Nkrumah and the great leaders. Now, the vision at that time was, at least Nkrumah, who was a socialist, by the way, was a radical form of Pan-Africanism, which was captured in his slogan, a United States of Africa. So he wanted to overcome the colonial national borders. When we think of Africa Day, we also think of the African diaspora. We also think of our brothers and sisters, you know, Black Americans, African Americans. And we ask ourselves, we remind ourselves how they got to be in America. They went there as slaves, can you see? Yeah. And so when we say Africa is for sale, we're not just talking about today's imperialism, today's capitalist exploitation, today's uneven development, today's Trump's, I don't know what Trump's protectionism, you know, is asserting, you know, might is right. We also think about all those people who were bought and sold, you know, in Africa. So there is that real sense that what happened at the Oval Office is so painful. It's an insult, you know, to that history. And okay, on the other end, when Ramaphosa went to meet Trump, that same week, the big story in South Africa was the unemployment figures. So our unemployment rate, it's called the expanded definition. When you count everyone who is unemployed, it's at 40%. Can you see? More than 40%. With the youth, it's more than 60%. So there is a view that Ramaphosa, our government, must do everything and anything to actually make sure that the situation doesn't get worse. Everyone wants to make sure that their economies grow, that they can take care of their people. But in doing that, it becomes competitive, it becomes divided, and it ends up being a question of allowing right-wingers like Trump, who have managed to grab power. It's exactly that relationship with America, with global capitalism, which has left South Africa with an unemployment rate of 40%. Can you see? Yeah, because all the wealth, profit repatriation. And Trump's deal is not to actually help the countries, is to squeeze them more. You know what I mean? Yeah, because we know where he's coming from. The American economy is declining. John, the reason it's declining is because capitalism itself is in crisis. The biggest capitalist economy in the world is going to have a problem when the very system which it's on top of, you know, is in crisis.
On the issue of Pan-African, the Pan-African League and African unity, and the first thing that comes to my mind is the Arab League. And so it strikes me that the question is really, what, unity of who? Unity of the capitalist governments or unity of the working class?
That question, John, it's very deep, because remember, there's this idea now that we are choosing between the East and the West. We are choosing between, I don't know, BRICS, China, and the EU or America. But in China, what is happening there, it's what we call capitalist restoration, can you see? So it's abandoning the socialist vision and project. In Russia, you know, we might be nostalgic about the Russian Revolution, but, you know, Russia is neoliberal, Can you see? Yeah. So that's the real confusion. And I can also relate that, take it further. So there's this whole thing about how Trump is backtracking from what I can call multilateralism, the idea that there should be regulations, the United Nations, there should be the World Trade Organization, whatever. But the truth is that multilateralism did not do much to stop the suffering of the working class, not only in the global South, but sometimes in the global North. So I think this whole thing really, at the heart of it, it's class struggle. It's a capitalist crisis. And when there's a capitalist crisis, the bosses always try to make the working class to pay, making poorer countries or developing countries or third world countries pay a price. It's part of the class dynamic, if you know what I'm trying to say. Yeah, it's part of the class dynamic. Yeah, so yeah, I agree with you. Even Pan-Africanism, it should be, let's say, revolutionary Pan-Africanism, calling for socialism, calling for, I don't know, workers' power, workers' governments. Bourgeois democracy has always been the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie, whether it's the Democratic Party or the Republican Party or the African National Congress. Can you see? Yeah. So, but now all pretense is gone now. Now, might is right. If you have got the money, if you have got the power, if you have got the bombs, you can bomb Palestine to smithereens. There's no consequence.
Right.
If you have got the money, you can exploit the poor. You can exploit, the working class, no consequence. That same attitude you will find even at the workplace. Bosses now feel, oh, why should you have a union? I'm giving you, a chance to make a living. Foreign direct investment, it's not as if when they do foreign direct investment, they're coming here as a charity to donate to Africa or global South countries. No, they're here to make a profit. Can you see? Yeah. And as soon as they can't make a profit, they pull out. And in fact, once they're here, they start demanding tax concessions, all sorts of, I don't know, kickbacks, concessions from these third world governments. Yeah.